Driving modes. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're basically going to go for 10, 15 minutes and kind of talk through your assertion, and hopefully I can ask some interesting questions or at least prompt in a certain way to kind of drive the conversation a little bit. But it seems like you have a great story, so I don't know how much driving the conversation I'm going to need to do. So let's just dive right in unless you have a question.
No, I think one of the things that I was thinking about before is allowing you to drive the conversation. I don't want to end up like on just a rant, not a rant, like, but just continuing to talk and talk and talk. So I think that was one thing that I wanted to self-monitor and at least say, okay, I'm going to let the interviewer drive the question. I think because the last podcast I was on where I got interviewed, I left the podcast thinking, gosh, there was like 100 more things I wanted to say. But then I said like a lot of things anyway. So it's sort of that back and forth. So I'm not sure. So we'll just see what happens, I guess.
Yeah, it's almost an experiment, right?
Right.
It kind of fits the theme of learn, unlearn, reevaluate, experiments, and go from there. So let's just start with briefly tell us who you are, what you're working, what cool project are you working on right now, and what did you have to unlearn to get you to this point?
Right. So my name is Stephen Thompson. I'm an entrepreneur and an educator. I'm working on a project of starting my own charter school in Los Angeles. And that's everything for me to say, because I have been for the past 20 years a educator, teacher. I was a teacher, assistant principal. I worked my way up the ladder in education. And this past year, I decided that I wanted to start my own school. So it is a scary thing to say that. In fact, I have an executive coach, and she said, you need to say you're an entrepreneur who's starting his own school. And that's the difficult challenge, making the jump from being, you know, working for somebody else to working for yourself. And the work doesn't change as far as, it does change, but the mindset is definitely a battle. So I'm really wrestling with that where, you know, hey, this is what I'm doing. I am an entrepreneur now, and I'm working on starting my own school.
Cool. That's super exciting. And let's dive a little bit into your internal battle or resistance with, because it sounds like you have this little battle going on. Am I an entrepreneur? Like or are you confident in saying I'm an entrepreneur now?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I think for me, like the badge of you're really an entrepreneur when someone pays you, then you're really an entrepreneur. Until someone pays you, you're not an entrepreneur. You're just a poser. And that is an unlearning that I'm working on currently is that, you know, no, I am, everyone has, once you start to unpack the world, you know, everybody has financial problems. I mean, MoviePass ran out of money this week, and I love MoviePass so much, but they ran out of money. So I'm like, hey, this giant corporation stock just went from $8 billion to $1 million, and they're getting payday loans, and I'm out here, you know, bootstrapping my own self in what I think is a financially responsible way. So I don't have, you know, $8 billion in stockholder money, and I have to go, you know, but I am learning principles, you know, to be a successfully entrepreneur financially. So I think for me that those sorts of things help put it into perspective for me that, you know, the battle over finances is not a unique one to myself. I think you can sit here and I can think like when you get into groups of people, you know, like Alt MBA or TMS or any sort of business groups, I have go in there thinking, oh, all these people got it all together. They're financially successful, they're wealthy, they're running their own businesses, and there's no problems whatsoever. But then you realize over time, we're all sort of in that same struggle. You know, I found that out sitting on boards that I'm on, that there's a financial struggle with what I thought. I walk in thinking, oh, this is a prominent person. They you know, sold a newspaper for millions of dollars, but they're filling out grant applications and doing fundraising dinners and trying to raise money just like the rest of us. So that to me sort of thinking, hey, you know what, we're all sort of in this together, you know, even the most prominent people, what I would think was prominence, are still having a financial battle. And that sort of like makes it to me say, hey, you know what? I am an entrepreneur. You know, I need to feel good about saying that to myself. It was one of the things I had with my coach at one of the revelations I had is that in Los Angeles, everybody you meet on the street will tell you they're a writer, they're a producer, then they're driving Uber or they're waiting tables. And that's kind of the joke when somebody says that, hey, I'm a producer. Now you're really, what restaurant are you working at? So for me, I always wanted to hide that. So I took screenwriting classes, but I also became an educator. So I would never tell people that I was a screenwriter, because I didn't want them to say, oh, you're waiting tables. No, I'm not. I have a career. I have a college degree. I have credentials, all these sorts of things. That's what I wanted to project to the world. And then I hid all my screenwriting. So, but then I started to say, you know what? These people have at least to give them credit for saying, hey, I am this. This is my dream. And this is, I'm going after it, rather than putting myself in this mocking position of, you know, you're just an Uber driver. And then for me, oh, I'm going to end up just being a Uber driver, or people are going to make fun of me or pity me because I left a position to become an administrator. And my skills didn't leave with me. So that's what I think is true, is that I have skills in my career that I built up, and I can just take them and place them into the entrepreneurial landscape. And that will allow me, I think, to get the success that I want financially as just the same success that I had, you know, in my previous life where someone else paid me. And when I take money out of the equation, then it's really about my skills and how I do the work. And that's a tremendous unlearning for me. And it's a day-to-day battle, but that's the one I think that I'm really working to fight against.
So what I hear you saying is it's really a mindset on what your, how you look at things, maybe like yes. Gratitude, right? Like mm-hmm. I'm grateful that I get to go to work and yeah, I might be waiting tables and I make money, but then on my free time, I'm working on my craft. I'm yes. developing my craft. Yeah. Cool. So let's shift a little bit because I really want to hear about this journey over the last year of you visiting 52 different coffee shops and how that helped maybe as a tool change your perspective on being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, well, I think it did it in a couple different ways. I think first I was influenced by two books that I read. One was called The Power of Habit. The other one was Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. And Elizabeth Gilbert, in her book, she talked about how she pursued something that she was interested in, gardening. And then that led her to write a book about this her novel just by pursuing this tiny interest. And in The Power of Habit, it talked about discipline and building personal discipline. So for me, I believe that, okay, well, if I'm going to eventually be an entrepreneur, I need to work on these discipline skills, but I need to do something passionate. And it's almost like what people always would say, if you follow your passion, the money will come. And I was just sort of doubting that. I'm like, I'm going to put this to the test. I'm like, just stop with this. At the end of the day, you got to make money. You got to make money. You got to pay the rent. My passion ain't paying the rent. But since everybody is saying, follow your passions and the money will come, then I said, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to set up a program and follow my passions. And the other thing is New Year's resolutions. And a lot of people set New Year's resolutions and then they get all excited about it. And then they even get excited about breaking New Year's resolutions. So for me, I'm like, I'm going to set a New Year's resolution and I'm going to see it all the way through. So I decided my passion is coffee. I love coffee. And there are coffee shops in Los Angeles. So I said, okay, I'm going to go see 52 coffee shops in LA. And by doing this, that was my New Year's resolution. And then when I began to pursue this, all of these skills I needed to develop started to kick in. So I made a plan. Okay, what day am I going to go? So I said every Wednesday I'm going to go to a coffee shop. And then I went on Yelp and began to look up coffee shops that were in the area. And I began to plot them in my journal. And then I got my Evernote out and I would document each coffee shop that I went to. So this was building discipline. This was creating an agenda. These are skills that you need to thrive in the entrepreneurial world. And I'm just building them into my day to day. Now, at the time, I was working as a virtual school administrator. So I worked from home naturally. So I said, well, why not take advantage of it? Why sit at home, just sitting at home? Why not get out in the public? So every Wednesday, I would go to a different coffee shop. And then it's interesting what you begin to find out about yourself. It's not really about the coffee. I would find that there was an internal battle that would go on. So, and stereotypes. I would go to a new coffee shop in a different place. And I would go in with, sometimes I'd be timid because like, oh, they're not going to want me to be here because I'm not a regular customer. And I would find myself going in there and feeling timid. And I'm sitting there thinking, Stephen, the barista does not care who you are. They want you to purchase their coffee. And then, so I saw that sort of these stories. And then there was like times where I found myself liking coffee shops that had the Wi-Fi posted. I didn't want to ask somebody for the Wi-Fi because I felt like if I was asking for the Wi-Fi, then they were going to think I'm just a freeloader. So there were places where I wouldn't ask for the Wi-Fi. So I said, you need to ask for the Wi-Fi. Stop this. So there's something that this sort of internal dialogue that I needed to just step up and say, this is ridiculous. Ask for the Wi-Fi. And so I found that going on. That sort of battle between, you know, telling myself a story that probably isn't true. And it's probably just thinking about empathy is like the barista is just working, you know, every day. But then I think research started to happen. So I started to go to these coffee places and then I started to learn more about coffee. I started to read about coffee and I started to making coffee. And then the thing about it is that it's that whole perfectionist mindset. Well, I don't know how to make coffee. I'm not a barista. But no, you can play around with making coffee. So I started researching the Civil War because I do write curriculum. I write history curriculum. And I found out that during the Civil War, you know, there was a blockade. The North blockaded the South and the South couldn't get coffee. So the South started to play around with different things to make coffee out of. So they made it out of sweet potatoes. So I looked up a recipe for sweet potato coffee and I bought some sweet potatoes. I dried the sweet potatoes out. I set them out on our patio and our neighbors would walk by and seeing these sweet potatoes. Then I grounded it up and I made sweet potato coffee. And I really couldn't tell the difference, but it was just sort of, it was different. But the thing about it is when I started talking more and more to people about it, people began to think that I was just this coffee aficionado, this coffee expert. And I have a terrible palate. I can't tell the difference between coffees. But it was more of this like, wow, I'm learning more and more about myself. And these skills that I'm building just by going to these coffee shops are transferring. And then when I started to document everything, I would take pictures, you know, and post them. I would keep my little journal on Evernote. And now I'm at the point where I've collected all of them. I made a prototype book and I want to put in inspirational quotes around just how my 52 weeks of coffee helped me to be able to move forward in my life and become an entrepreneur. But more of it, a lot of things I see and how I think this could help people is the idea of building your own passion project. There's a lot of things that I see in the world of self-development or self-improvement are all program specific. So you sign up for, you know, Stephen Covey or John Maxwell or, you know, Brené Brown or whoever the guru is, and then you follow their program. But what happens inside of that is that if you don't follow their program correctly, they start to correct you. So not every program is meant for everybody, but the purpose is self-improvement. So why not teach people to build something to help improve them around something that they enjoy? So I'm not telling people to go out to 52 coffee shops, but I do think there's a power in planning a 52-week project for yourself around something that you enjoy. And there was another book that I read where the author talked about that. He said you should have, you know, a week-long project, a month-long project, a quarterly project, and a 52-week project and in regards to your life. And that will definitely help you feel stronger. And I think that's where like my Mr. Miyagi reference came up is where in the Karate Kid, you know, he had him wax on, wax off, and he just wanted to go play karate. But then when he did karate, all of that wax on, wax off paid off. So the 52 weeks of coffee, it was the skills that I was building up, the discipline that led me into other areas. I started to, you know, read, learn, like in my profession, I had always been a teacher. And what I began to learn is that a lot of schools, startup schools, failed because not of educational programs, but because of financial programs. So what I then began to do is I began to study finances. Now, I didn't have the money to go back to school. So what I started to do is I went and read, you know, Warren Buffett's letters to his shareholders. And then that led me to reading, you know, the SEC online. And then I read the Edgar website where you could search public companies and read about public companies and read their financial statements. And I'm like, wait a minute, all this stuff is free. Why am I don't need to pay anybody to give me financial advice when I can look up Warren Buffett and read a primary source like Warren Buffett, not 10 people telling me Warren Buffett's advice, but a primary source. And when I want to read about stock companies, I can go read, you know, their holdings. And then I got a small account on Robinhood and I began to trade. Now I'm spending like $5-$10 on penny stocks, but I went to a shareholder meeting and I asked a question at a shareholder meeting. So it was, that came from the discipline of going to coffee shops, where now I'm teaching myself the one skill that I needed to be able to make the leap into a school developer. I needed to learn finance. I needed to learn school finance. So now I've learned school finance and I can go into a room and things move very quickly with me starting my schools because I have agreements set up with the attorneys, with the budget office, with all of these people. And when I talk to them, they're like, you're not the average charter developer. You know, all of these other sort, all these things. And for me, I didn't have to pay for a lot of these things, you know, even just starting a business, you know, to get a 501c3, you go to the website, you pay $20 to the state of California, they file it. Then you've got to get your 1023 form. That's $600 to the government. But I can read this myself and I can have somebody check it. I don't have to outsource my brain to a lawyer and think they're the ones with all the knowledge. They're just reading books like I'm reading books. There's no magical power bequeathed on them because they're attorneys. So it's more of like, I don't need to outsource. We don't need to outsource. We can get advice. You know, I'm not just trying to recklessly fill out my 1023 form on myself, send in the $600 and bully myself through it. But I know what questions to ask. I can ask questions. Well, what does this word mean? What does this word mean? Go to dictionaries, get advice. And then things move a lot quicker because I'm not coming to it from a position of, I need to get this done. File this for me. No, it's more of like you use the status quo to move through the status quo. And now I'm at this point where I'm an entrepreneur on my own, but the specifics, it's not just I want to be an entrepreneur and that's a cool idea. You're starting your own school. It's like the dip. Everybody thinks it's a great idea, but then you've got to pass organic chemistry. So here I am. This is a great idea starting a school, but know what? I got to write a charter petition. I've got to do a 5-year budget. I've got to do financial projections. That's starting to start a charter school. It's not just, it is, you know, you want to change the world for kids. Yes, but you don't get in a position to change. You can't just walk into a board meeting and say, I want to change the world for kids. You're going to get thrown out. You've got to walk in with 5-year budget projections and you've got to learn how to do them. And that's where I saw that, you know, schools were failing because they weren't doing that. And financial literacy is not something that we teach educators. And that was something, and the discipline to get financial literacy, to learn accounting principles, is doing something over and over and over again on a consistent basis. And going to a coffee shop every week, over and over and over again, build up my muscles to be disciplined. And that is something that I needed. I had a lot of ideas, but I needed to constrain them within a framework. It's not putting myself into a box. It's sort of putting myself in a position to succeed. And I needed to do that. That discipline is what I was lacking was discipline, because I had a lot of ideas and I had a lot of unfinished projects and a lot of fear of doing things. But once I started getting out into the world and doing them, then I began to chop away at those fears, and my productivity began to increase. And what happened is my productivity increased, but my health got better. I wasn't, you know, burning the midnight oil and working 15-hour days. My productivity got higher, but I was spending less time working because I was working more focused. So that's why I have a podcast. That's why I have a blog. That's why I went through Alt MBA, you know, and I did it in a healthy way because I got that discipline of going to a coffee shop every week. And there's other things that I learned too, you know, just the little quirks of coffee shops that I found that I enjoyed coffee shops that were more where the furniture didn't match, where there was weird art on the wall. There was one coffee shop I went in and they had pictures of Audrey Hepburn in the bathroom. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. These pictures of Audrey Hepburn in the bathroom and mismatched furniture, where I found myself not really feeling comfortable in the coffee shops that were very structured. You know, everything matched, everything looked perfect. They were cool, but then again, it was like, I just didn't feel that as I did with the you know, the mismatched furniture, you know, the barista's got a Wu-Tang Clan, you know, tattoo on his arm, you know, those sorts of things that you begin to notice. And then there's just so many of them. And I think that helped me as far as like just thinking about business and competition is that in my area that I live in, again, I live in Los Angeles, so this is not unique to somebody in Iowa, but in a 15-minute walk from any direction from where I live, there were 10 different places I could go to, and they open up all the time. I mean, so there's so many coffee shops and they're all full because I think there's so many coffee drinkers. So you don't need to compete because there are so many coffee shops. So when people ask me, what makes you different? What makes your school different? How do you compete with the school up the street? I'm like, I don't need to compete with the school up the street. You know, there's plenty of children to go around for all of us to serve. And why do I need to create this scarcity? It's like Bernadette Jiwa's book, Story. You don't need to compete when you know who you are. And I began to unlearn this idea of competition. Now, when you talk to people like that, they look at you like you're crazy, like you're going to fail. You need to talk about a pain point and you need to talk about how you're going to compete and how you're going to be better. I'm like, no, I don't. I mean, look at the coffee shops. You can be a small coffee shop and you can thrive and you can survive. You don't have to be Starbucks. I used to have this conversation in place of employment. I'm like, we can serve the people who want to be here and be comfortable being a small coffee shop. And we could do this for 40 years, or we can try to scale and try to be Starbucks, but that's a different business. If you want to scale, if you want to play that game, at least know what you're getting into, but don't try to play that game and not know what you're getting into. But I think that I can be fine over here being a small coffee shop. And if it grows into a larger network of coffee shops, fine. I'll deal with that when I come to it. But I think just being in a place where, you know, there's not scarcity, and that I can just, their children aren't going away. And coffee, I always bring that back to coffee. There's a coffee shop that keeps opening all the time. There's even one that just opened right within walking distance of my house. And this is dangerous. I'm like, this place is right there. I could go there every day. But what I did is I said, this is going to be my analog coffee shop where I'm not going to use Wi-Fi. I'm not going to ask for Wi-Fi. I'm only going to take a book there. I'm going to take a journal. I'm going to take a notebook. I will not use Wi-Fi at this coffee place because I feel like health-wise, I need to come down from time to time and work on just being, you know, present and not being connected all the time. It's sort of, they even think that like, you know, that's 1994. And as I went back, I began to see like I've always had like a love of coffee shops. You know, even when I was in college, I would go to a coffee shop and I would study. I would journal. I would read scriptures. I would hang out with people. And then when I moved to LA, I would go to coffee shops. I would read, I would hang out. you know, I purchased a T-Mobile account at Starbucks before they had free Wi-Fi, and I would go to Starbucks. I would write, I would read. So there are so many things that I've done in my life at a coffee shop that it felt like so much of a natural extension of me to expand out and go to other coffee shops. And when you do that, you begin to see even the neighborhoods that you go to. So it's like, we can, even living in Los Angeles, you can get caught up in like the area that you live in and you never go out of it. But I got to go and see the city in so many different ways. And then that led to me, I began during this coffee shop journaling time, I would always take pictures of street murals. And then that got me interested in researching artists and street artists and those types of things, which helped build the backbone of my weekly podcast. And it fed my love for history that I had in college, and it made me a better educator because I had, you know, interesting stories to think about. So that's a long, that's really a lot of it, you know, right there.
Cool. So that was like 20 minutes. So what I'll do is actually